Harder will step out of the box. The right-handed hitter back in there. Strasburg ready to go. The 1-2 pitch slider, strike three called, a no-hitter!
Yes, indeed. That was the no-hitter thrown by Steven Strasburg. What year was that?
Nine. That was my last start at Tony Gwynn Stadium.
2009. You know what I remember about that year was I got traded from Milwaukee to San Diego that year. And I remember like the first, it would have been in May, which I think would have been postseason for you guys. I think you guys played Virginia.
Yeah.
I think you started the day I got my first start as a Padre on the road in Colorado. Buddy had it up on the screen, and you know it was going well when I walked out, and then we came back.
I'll never forget. I didn't give up, not to toot my own horn too much, I didn't give up very many home runs in college, but one of them, my last one, was to Phil Gosselin in that Virginia game, and he like hit the scoreboard on it. And I always tell myself, I was like, oh, that guy made the big leagues. Like, he must have been pretty good. So,
you know? Make yourself feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah.
Steven Strasburg joins us here, just talking a little bit about San Diego State and some of the things he has going. And, of course, the Padres and everything they have going right now in the midst of, I think, one of their best seasons. It may not end up that way in terms of how many wins the Padres end up getting this year. I think the record is 98 or 99. The 98 team, I think, has the most wins in franchise history. Obviously, you know, they can't get there. I mean, they could if they went out. But I still think this is going to go down as one of the better seasons from start to finish. Steven, you grew up here in San Diego. You obviously spent your entire career with the Nationals. Are you torn at all watching these games? I mean, I know there's a closet Padre fan in there, as there was for me, because you know you're no longer playing, though.
Yeah,
so.
I think, you know, when it gets to this time of year, you just start to follow the teams that are kind of like, I can imagine that they're going through what we went through.
Yeah.
And, you know, you pull for them. I mean, I was an underdog. You know, I pull for the underdog. So I think watching this, it just really brings back those really vivid memories and how, you know, it's almost like you remember the feeling, but you don't remember any specific thing that happened. And, you know, that kind of like gets the juices flowing for me just watching these games here. And, you know, they have a good test coming up. And, but, you know, I mean, that's playoff baseball. You know, it starts now. And, you know, it's all about doing like the little things. I think, you know, from my experience, it was, you know, teams change. Like the top teams, the ones who really go far. I look back on the, you know, the Giants when they're making those runs. And, you know, as a pitcher facing them, I want to say it was like 2014. You know, you're facing a really good lineup, and it's like, you know, but these guys, they do the little things.
They
do. You
know,
they are going to grind on you every single pitch.
Talk about that a little bit. I bring it up often when I'm doing the radio or I get a chance to do the TV games. When a lineup is consistently going 7, 8, 9 pitches, not just one guy, but 4 or 5 guys in the lineup that do it, what kind of stress does that put on you as a pitcher?
Well, I just think it's like every mistake is like compounded. You know, as a pitcher, you're always going to leave pitches over the plate. It compounds in the sense that like when you're facing hitters that keep the game simple and they're just trying to keep the line moving, you know, that's a single up the middle. That's not a, you know, trying to hit one in the gap and flying out.
You know?
So It's really like every inning becomes the ninth. I think you see that where, you know, you can go as a starting pitcher and you can get away with pitches, but then it almost seems like the good teams and the good hitters in the ninth, they hit like another gear. And that's the best way I can describe it, is that, you know, it's the ninth inning from the first inning on.
I always describe playoff baseball as pitchers, everybody's more focused. And so if let's say you're getting a ball and a half of pitches in the middle of a plate during a regular season, that goes down to one.
Mm-hmm.
And hitters are spitting on pitches that maybe in the regular season they might offer at. Did you notice the same thing in your experience?
100%. You know, I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's so fine-tuned to where it's like you can sit out there and try and be perfect, and I think that's the natural tendency, and that gets you completely out of, like, the frame of mind that got you there in the first place. And it's like, you know, that's the thing. It's like these good teams, it's like they know their identity. They pull for each other. Right. And it's like when it comes crunch time, like, you're doing the little things correctly, and it's just really simplifying the game as best as you can and not necessarily feeling like there's any added pressure on each pitch. It's just, hey, as you know, I'm going out there and I'm executing this pitch. I'm going to execute this. And I know, you know, if I can do that 70 out of, you know, 95, 100 pitches, I'm going to be okay. And if the scoreboard looks bad, then I can live with that.
One more. I know you don't like talking about yourself, but I have a lot of questions about, mm-hmm. you know, especially that year. Did you hear the noise prior to that last start or going into that series against the Astros? You know, the noise around Steven Strasburg has been, he's not willing to step into the fold here when it, yeah. when it really counts. Did yeah. you hear that, and how did you channel that after, if you did at all?
Yeah, I think, you know, that was kind of something that carried me, like, through my whole career, and I was like, you know, it's there. You know, I think it also goes back to just kind of them making the really tough decision when I blew out my elbow to say, hey, like, you're not going to pitch in the playoffs. I was young. I was just kind of like, I don't know what's going on. But it's like now every opportunity that you're there wow. from a personal perspective, it's like it gets magnified. And, you know, I would say that was kind of like a turning point in my career. You know, I feel like that there was, you know, some injuries. I was riding the high and the low. And then I finally got to this point where it's like I was I made it to the end. You know, that was the biggest thing is like, can I be upright in September?
Right, right.
And, you know, I was able to do that. And I just really loved the teammates that I had there. Gerardo Parra, Anibal Sanchez. You know, we had a young Juan Soto who was great there. Throwing to Yan Gomes, Kurt Suzuki. You know, those guys, just like you play for them, right? And I just wanted to go out there and leave it all out there on the table. And, you know, if it didn't work, it didn't work. But man, those guys, like, there were so many points in that playoff run where I got bailed out. And, you know, they can sit there and say, oh, World Series MVP. And I was like, well, those, my teammates,
they helped
me
get there. Picked you up.
You know, it would never have happened if it wasn't for all these. I mean, Howie Kendrick, you know, it's like you look back on all the big hits that he had, it's wouldn't have happened otherwise.
You brought up one of my favorite guys to watch in Juan Soto. Was it pretty apparent the moment he got called up that he was going to be this good?
Yeah, I think because he made a jump. Like he
was from Double A, right?
I think it was High A.
I think you're right.
Because he was tearing it up down there. And you know, a lot of times when you get a guy called up, it's like the game's like sped up. You know, like guys' breaking pitches are sharper. Like they're hitting their spots better. And there's an adjustment period. And the thing that I noticed early on with Juan was just his plate discipline was off the charts. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, you see from the young guys. It's like, all right, they might be guessing. They might be trying to keyhole you in certain counts. But Juan's just seeing the baseball and reacting.
Yeah.
So, and that's very, very special skill.
He's very special from that standpoint. Here's one that just kind of popped up. I mean, Paul Skenes kind of reminds me a little bit of what you went through. If you haven't spoke to him, if you had a chance to speak to him, what kind of advice would you have for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because I was kind of at the early stage of like the next, you know, let's hype up every prospect, right?
And yes, you were.
Yeah, and I just looking from afar, it's like you don't, you know, I didn't really understand what was going on at the time. I was young, and I was like, I felt really uncomfortable being in the clubhouse and being around these guys that I idolized, these veterans. I mean, I'm throwing to Pudge Rodriguez as a rookie. And it was just weird to me. It didn't really sit
that all
well.
The attention was on you and you had these vets that had been in there for a while.
And it's just, you know, it's easy to be, you know, labeled the savior of the franchise. And, you know, that's a lot of weight that you have to put on, that you could put on yourself. But I would say just like you just have to enjoy it. Like there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, and it's all about just finding those ways to get better every single day. Like this is just a long career. You know, his next start, it's not just that start. Like there's many more starts down the road, and just really look at it from the perspective of like, you know, this is going to be a long career, and I just want to know at the end of the day that I, you know, turned over every stone and I gave it everything I possibly could.
Now, Stephen, you were built up old-fashioned, right? You talked a little bit about getting in the weight room, kind of changing your whole body structure, really. How much analytics did you actually get to participate in, if you will, and how much did you like it or didn't like it?
Yeah, I think that the analytics part, especially from pitching, you know, one of the things that, you know, I had a pitching coach, Steve McCaddy, early on in my career, and he would always talk about paralysis by analysis. And I think with that, when you get young guys, I think it's very easy to have the analytics part change who you are as a pitcher and what makes you successful. You know, I would use more so just like the data on a from a scouting perspective. You know, the biggest thing is that, like, you know, when you're in college and you only give up like a couple home runs in a 3-year career, and then you get, you know, clipped a few times, you're like, oh man, like this doesn't feel right. And so the immediate thing is to like start to tinker and start to change, and then you start to, oh, I need to throw 60 pitches in the bullpen in between, and then I got it figured out. And, you know, when you have a long career, you start to realize that you're going to give up home runs. And then, you know you're going to give up home runs, it's how can you, you know, pick out where your outs are in the lineup? How can you stay away from slug? And, you know, that's really the thing that that really helped me, was just trying to stay away from slug, you know. And it's like really using my pitches and my sequences to keep the ball in the yard.
Get it off the sweet part of the bat.
Yeah, and you know, but at the same time, when you got two strikes, like, know how to punch a guy out. You know, don't wait around. Don't, you know, mess around. It's like, boom, put him away.
You know, you came up pretty quickly after you got drafted, and you did have a lot of the eyeballs on you. And listen, having been in clubhouses, I know that could rub people the wrong way to no bad doing on your own. Who were, like, your mentors when you came up? Like, who were the guys that kind of put their arm around you?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, obviously, Ryan Zimmerman, Zim, was great. And he's always more, like, the quiet type. And then, yeah, you know, but he was always there to include you with a lot of the stuff, like, you know, away from the field, a lot of the team-building things. I would say, like, the one guy who, like, we kind of, like, our personalities, like, he's got a very dry sense of humor. But as I've gotten older, I've learned to, like, accept it and, like, enjoy it. But Jordan Zimmerman,
he
is a character. And, you know, his family and my family are still really close. They were out here for 4th of July with us, and we're already talking about planning another trip together. But, you know, he was a guy that, like, you know, as a young pitcher, I mean, he kept it very, very simple. And it was just, he had that bulldog mentality.
Yeah,
and it was like, I'm going to make you beat me. And that's something that, you know, at the end of the day, like, if you go out there and do that, like, you can take it. You know, it's not like, you know, oh, second guess, man, I should have thrown that pitch. I should have thrown that. It's like, it doesn't matter whichever one you're committed to and you have the most conviction with.
Oh, Scrape, you got your hand up.
I got one.
I'm sorry.
I'm just taking over.
Go ahead.
No, I'm in some weird world over there watching a great conversation from in studio. But my question, we talked about Paul Skeens, and we have a pretty good chance at Rookie of the Year here in San Diego. I'm not going to ask you to choose who's going to win, but what has Jackson Merrill shown you this year in his rookie year and leading the team, playing center?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. I think when you get the first taste of, you know, going through to the finish line, especially when you come from, you know, shortened minor league season or like with Skeens, like college season and stuff, that, you know, there's going to be some, you know, I guess physical breakdown at some point. But mm-hmm. when you're staying consistent with that and you've kind of proven that, you know, you belong, you know, that's one thing that, you know, it doesn't come along very often. And in a way, I feel like it's, you know, it can be that could be a little bit harder from a position player standpoint, because, you know, starting pitcher, like, you can go out there and be lights out, but you're pitching once every 5 days, 5-6 days. And, you know, when you start to, like, change the rotation around just for a long-term health perspective, like, those position players, they're grinding, they're playing through injuries. And to be able to have that, you know, professional sense and, like, feel to still go out there and perform, you know, it's impressive when you see a guy that young be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing we haven't had to have a discussion of is health. He's been available every single game. A lot of injuries with pitchers this year. Some of the best pitchers in our game have missed a year due to injury. I mean, you see it. Guys are throwing harder than they ever have. You kind of started that trend as well. Is there a remedy to this? I mean, there was a time you and I both grew up in an era watching aces face each other often, and it was like the game to watch. We don't have that as much. I mean, you get a matchup like yesterday with Fromber and Dylan; those seem to be far and few in between. Is there a remedy for this? I know you've seen some of the conversation about Major League Baseball, maybe, you know, legislating this into the game somehow. I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the game of baseball, like, it's in its purest form, is doesn't require, you know, outside elements to, you know, control it almost. It's tough to say. I mean, that's such a hard question to answer. That's the puzzle piece that I looked for my entire career. Right. You know, right. You know, I think one of the things going up was that, you know, I idolized those guys that, you know, were eating innings or innings eaters, right? And you don't see those guys valued anymore. You know, one of the guys that, you know, I got a chance to work with in the offseason was James Shields when I was coming back here in San Diego for the off seasons. And, you know, I just thought that was one thing where I just, like, man, those guys are just pitching through everything. Like, they're reliable. They are going out there every 5 days, and they're going deep. I don't know if it's analytics, you know, I did start to see where it's like, oh, you know, this guy can't face the lineup the third time through. You know, it's hard to say if guys are being rushed to the big leagues because they throw hard and they're dominating, hitters, and maybe that they haven't really understood how to pitch and they're more throwers. You know, it's a tough call. You know, I think, you know, I think the game's just changed in that aspect, and I don't really know if it's we're ever going to see it again.
Yeah, I know that's what the league is clamoring for at some point. But you're right. Yeah, it's almost like what we say, the toothpaste is out of the tube already. I don't know that you can put it back in. We run a little short on time. Scrape, you got something else?
I got one more. It's about like the pitch clock and all these different things that have come about after you left the game. But, like, would you have been in favor of a pitch clock? Because I think at first many people thought it was going to be awkward, it was going to be weird, but we've all gotten used to it. So what are your thoughts on things like the pitch clock?
You can be honest too.
Yeah, I think the pitch clock is controversial. I think it's one of those things that was, like, kind of pointless to me. I think if, you know, as a pitcher, it's like you want to pitch at a fast tempo. You know, the hitter wants to slow the game down. But at this, like, there's been some instances, obviously, where there's been a pitch clock violation and it's really messed up the outcome of the game. And I think that's not right from a personal perspective. You know, that's the difference about baseball compared to any other sport. There is no clock.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think if you allow the players as a whole to police it themselves, you know, and I think that's where you can't police it yourself anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it's like pitch clock didn't really come into factor because, like, you're trying out to go out there and get in this repetitive tempo, and that tempo is fast because you want to have the hitter almost be on the defensive and not in the offensive.
You're 100% right. I mean, that was the game. It was, he's going to try to go quick, I'm going to try to go slow so I can kind of think this out. Who's going to win that cat and mouse?
Mark Burley threw like a 2-hour and 5-minute complete game against us one time, and it was just like rapid fire. Here it is, hit it, sinker, ground ball, and I was like, man, that was a quick game.
Strauss, give us Give us the website.
Yeah, it's aztecalumni.com. The sign-up sheet is open for the golf tournament on November 15th. And, yeah, I would love everybody to come out and support the baseball program. You know, I believe it can go to some great heights here. And really honor your dad. You know, he's got a special place in my heart, and he always will.
Yeah, he definitely considered you a second son, Stephen. appreciate you coming on, man. We'll
thank you so much.
Make sure we get the word out for sure.
Appreciate it.
More Gwen and Chris on the other side.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide cleans better than the leading competitive free detergent, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues.
Plus, Tide Free and Gentle has no dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on her skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.